With an approaching deadline of March 15th, should Congress even reauthorize FISA? We'll talk about it today on Jay Sekulow Live.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
What is your sense about where we are on these FISA negotiations in terms of renewing the law or not?
Well, I think they serve an important role in our national security, and we did see abuses with the FISA court.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
The Durham report, I am hopeful, is going to literally name names, list the people who did abuse the FISA court, and lay out penalties that then Attorney General Barr can go and carry out.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
And that was, again, from Steve Scalise, the Republican whip in the House of Representatives, and Steve Scalise saying that he hopes the Durham investigation leads to even jail time for FISA abusers. Now, why is FISA in the news so much right now? Well, it's not just because of the Horowitz Inspector General report and the wrongdoing we know about, the lies, the fact that a senior Justice Department attorney who misused information, edited information to get the FISA warrant on Carter Page ultimately. It's not just about that. It's because Congress now is that FISA is up for renewal, and it must be renewed by March 15th, or the FISA law, and then the court system that follows with the law, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, would expire. So Congress is working on a very short deadline for them. I mean, we're talking about a couple of weeks. Let me go to Than Bennett, because Than, yesterday in Washington, D.C., the House of Representatives, controlled by Democrats, in the Judiciary Committee, controlled by Jerry Nadler, he once again showed why, when it came to like the impeachment and leadership roles, that he is not getting, he is not able to keep control of even his own members and run his committee. And so he had to actually pull the House reauthorization yesterday from the Judiciary Committee.
Yeah, the Judiciary Committee was supposed to consider it yesterday, Jordan. It was a reauthorization package, pretty much a clean reauthorization that was put together by Chairman Nadler and Adam Schiff. And Jordan, the dissension they got in the ranks was from Zoe Lofgren. I mean, so you've got three members who are all impeachment managers, all worked very closely together, who are now disagreeing with this. Let me tell you this, Jordan. This is what frustrates me. I mean, how many years have we been on this broadcast telling people how important FISA is, but how significant the problems are within it and how much the abuses are? Jordan, we're within 3 weeks before the reauthorization, before this bipartisan group, basically the House Democrats, have acknowledged what has been patently clear for a long time. Look, my view is that the program does need reauthorized, but it's also clearly been abused, Jordan. This three-week runway is not very long, but at least the conversations are now taking place.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I want to ask our callers today, 1-800-684-3110. Do you believe FISA should be renewed at all? I mean, there have been times throughout this process, I will tell you, that I believe that the whole system should be scrapped. FISA should be scrapped. The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court should be scrapped. We had a presidential campaign spied on, then a transition spied on, horrible abuses by the FBI. And the fact that the American people should trust the FBI to go into these, and their attorneys to go into these hearings where there is no defense put on. So they're supposed to put forward all the exculpatory evidence, and yet they use things like the Steele dossier to get FISA warrants on people, that the whole thing should be scrapped and we should start over. Now, what I would be comfortable with, and I'd like to take your phone calls on this, 1-800-684-3110, is a short-term renewal of FISA so it doesn't interrupt any of the actual uses of FISA, which is for terrorism. But with that short-term renewal comes the complete scrapping of it, ultimately, and an entirely new framework for how we're going to carry out this kind of surveillance and the legal processes that will be available, the due process that will be available as well, especially when it involves Americans. And Attorney General Barr said he will put new rules around this reauthorization as well in the meantime. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Do we keep FISA? Do we scrap it? Do we just let a temporary reauthorization go and come up with something new? Give us a call.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
So, folks, you understand the significance of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act post 9/11 to prevent terrorism. And there is a role for our intelligence agencies and the FBI and Department of Justice certainly to play in these wiretap programs. They're supposed to target foreigners or those who have become, in a sense, Americans that are no longer being treated as Americans, so they can be utilized under FISA. And get a warrant, and then you're treated as a foreign agent of a country or an enemy, even, and you can then get this surveillance, which again brings up due process concerns because when you talk about Americans, their due process is taken away because the surveillance application for warrant is done in a proceeding where, of course, you don't get a defense to the warrant. And you won't even necessarily know that this was authorized against you. You know, all of this has come to light because of the abuse of FISA that we suspected had become used as a political tool in the most J. Edgar Hoover sense of it by the FBI, which was always the concern, even way back when FISA was first authorized, was that the abuse level potential was very high. But that the terrorism threat to the country at the time outweighed that. So we went ahead and moved forward with it. And honestly, we don't know that much about other abuses. We know about what happened to the Trump campaign. We know how bad that abuse was. And the court then came out, Than, and said, you know, if this happened with the Trump campaign where we got doctored evidence to get the warrants on Carter Page to surveil the Trump campaign and an American citizen, and then the transition of the president of the United States, then we have to question all of the FISA applications that came before us, not actually going back through those. But they said, you have to question. So it's, in effect, the court saying also to the American people that this whole system is flawed.
Well, because they trusted the government, Jordan. I mean, look, this is about the most sobering, serious power you could imagine giving to an agency of the government, the power to surveil an American citizen. And if we're going to have a system like that, it has to be handled carefully. And when it's abused, there have to be consequences. There have to be reforms. And look, I think the court is right to say we're not sure how deep the mistrust should be. We know we got deceived once. We know we got lied to at least once, actually many times through the course of these reapplications. Did it happen more off. And Jordan, my own view on this is that this process has to become adversarial in order for it to survive. And, you know, just more broadly, we said so long ago, if there aren't fixes in place, the entire structure, the entire program will be threatened because people won't be willing to reauthorize it. Jordan, you don't want to say, I told you so, but here we are. 3 weeks before reauthorization, and we don't know if they can reauthorize it because you don't know if you can get a bipartisan group together to put fixes in place so that they can trust it. We'll see. That deadline's now 3 weeks away.
And there's creative ways to make an adversarial process without altering the unique secretive process that needs to be in place for a legitimate surveillance. So, for instance, there could be an office set up with inside DOJ whose job is to fight back on every application so that they are thoroughly scrutinized and that they have legal opposition to them, a representation in court, so that really the government has got to do more than just give a judge their application, go into court without anybody on the other side, say, yeah, here's the exculpatory evidence, or we didn't find any, and here's our evidence, and not really tell the judge exactly where they got it from necessarily, and sometimes go back three or four times, on, even when they've been denied, to ultimately get the warrant, which gets authorized at somewhere about 99.1%. So, I mean, almost 100% get the green light forward. Why not have, almost in a sense, like a public defender, but more sophisticated than that, who goes in, it has access to review it, and their job is to argue against it, to actually argue against it, so that you really have to make the government prove to use this power. It shouldn't be the easy, you know, Than, this should not be the easiest case for the DOJ and FBI to make. This should be the toughest case to make, and that it still could be a secretive process. But knowing that we had, in a sense, a group of attorneys for the government whose role was to seriously vet it, to make them argue it out in court as if it was a real adversarial process. I think something like that would make people feel much more comfortable.
Yeah, it is supposed to be the toughest case to make. And in fact, Jordan, it's really the only process that I can think of where the prosecuting attorneys, so to speak, actually have a fiduciary obligation to reveal everything about the other side. So they actually have to come forward and make the case against it. Here's the problem. They have not been doing that. So I could not agree with you more wholeheartedly that something like that has to happen. You have to have an office. It can be secret, but it is their fiduciary job to actually oppose the so-called, you know, prosecuting attorneys. And look, here is one piece of good news. The Attorney General has basically said that he is essentially willing to do that administratively through his own department. So I take great heart in that. I trust him. I think he would do it. Jordan, my concern comes in, though. I trust him to do it for as long as he's there.
Right.
But if it's not in statute, what happens when he's not the Attorney General?
No, I mean,
that still
gives
me
pause.
That's what
I'm putting forward. I get the need to keep it on a short-term basis. I think it should be probably a clean reauthorization on a short-term basis with the Attorney General. And I will say he told Republicans during a closed-door lunch this week that he would use his own rulemaking authority that Than was talking about to enact changes to the court that don't require congressional approval, and that those changes have the backing of Senate Republicans who described them as being along the lines of the corrective actions Inspector General Horowitz recommended in his report. And that's all great so long as Attorney General Barr is there and the Trump administration is in charge. And that may be that time period we need where there's the reauthorization, changes put in place by Attorney General Barr. But I want to put the pressure back on Congress in this reauthorization to say, you need to come up with something new. I think we should scrap the name. I think we should scrap the court system and come up with something new. And it might be that it's still very similar, but that we do away with a program that has so many negative connotations to law-abiding Americans and to presidential campaigns, and that we refocus. The purpose of FISA is to keep Americans safe. If we need that, okay, but let's do it in a way and redo the process, and so give them enough time to do that, but put the burden on Congress so they can't just run away, reauthorize this for so many more years and run away from it, and then expect the administrations to put in the right changes, and then Congress getting all upset when they don't like a FISA that they learn about or a process that they learn about from an IG report. I want to go to the phones on this. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Jerry's calling in from Rhode Island on line one. Jerry, welcome to Jay Secchio Live.
Hello, team.
Hey, Jerry.
Just saying, how many things are already in statute, but the official applicants who are putting the application in lack zero integrity? So the thing's already in statute. Jordan, first time I've ever disagreed with you. You can't scrap the whole system. I have the benefit of having a family member who is a government employee who was to track sleeper cells in our country. In our country. Without this tool, how could he do it? As an officer of the court applying, and most of these people, by the way, are attorneys, they have to understand integrity, zealous integrity, and they need oversight. And we've seen from the last year or two, that was lacking. It's kind of
My problem. Here at CJ, I'm not saying scrap the idea. Okay, so I think that you need to reauthorize it until you got something you can put in place that's better. Because of what you just said, tracking sleeper cells. But let me tell you about sleeper cells. If those are non-Americans, the bar for due process drops significantly. It's much easier for Americans to understand to get those warrants, to go through that process, to track them. But the problem that we're starting to uncover is how much this was potentially used on American citizens, sometimes lawfully. Potentially, yes. Sometimes, I'm sure there are Americans that were part of some of those sleeper cells, sure, that are American citizens. But that's when higher bars of due process are necessary. So I believe, I don't think we're in disagreement, Jerry. I think you have to keep it. Trust Attorney General Barr to make the right changes. Like he said, for instance, Than, no presidential campaigns get investigated unless the Attorney General signs off on it. I think that's good for the future of every attorney general. But he got criticized for that and saying he's just keeping the Trump administration and the Trump campaign clear. But I think that would be a great precedent to set in the future for all attorney generals, is that if you want to go to that level, almost interfering in the U.S. election, you better get the current U.S. attorney general's sign off so that their name is forever tied to it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I actually think I agree with Jerry. I think he agrees with us. Jordan, here's the thing. He's right. The statute does require the attorneys to present both sides. The problem is it gives that authority to the same person. I'm just saying that authority should stay in statute, but the authority to prosecute should be with one person, and the authority to oppose should be with a different person, so it's truly adversarial. That's the change I think should be made.
This would not be like that revolutionary for the court, for such a secretive process. That also, by the way, the cover's kind of been blown on this. That's why I think a name change, kind of a new setup would be good. We'll take your calls, 1-800-684-3110, and politics, of course.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Is Congressman Steve Scalise, I think someone who understands the need to track those who might be looking to harm Americans, even members of Congress. He was harmed himself horrifically in that shooting, targeted shooting by a liberal activist. And, you know, there was a tweet last week, and someone tweeted out, you know, has anybody ever from Bernie Sanders' supporter ever committed any act of violence? And Steve Scalise wrote back, I can think of one. So I think he understands the need for the security, but also need for reforms. Take a listen, Bite 4.
We're going to push for the kind of reforms that are necessary to make sure that this important national security tool maintains the ability and the integrity that it deserves, with criminal penalties on the other side if somebody abuses the process like we've already seen.
That's important to me, too, Than, as we talk through FISA before, and as we take people's phone calls. Is people think that there's already built into FISA all of these great protections, and if it's one of those things where if we just follow the rules, everything would be fine. The problem is, as Steve Scalise noted, there aren't criminal penalties that are immediate as part of FISA. Yes, there are crimes you could charge attorneys that come from more general crimes of, you know, evidence and things like that. But when it comes to FISA, there's not criminal liability built in.
Yeah, this is something that we've talked about a lot, Jordan. I mean, and the first layer of this is always that when there's an abuse like this, that person has to be relieved from duty, and we don't have assurance of that in this case either. I think that is what is happening right now inside the apparatus, and I'm grateful for that. But, you know, Jordan, I couldn't agree more on the criminal component of this because, again, it's the layer of seriousness. We're not giving, you know, someone the authority to tax, as serious as that is. I mean, the authority to tax is big. We are literally giving someone the authority to surveil an American citizen and infringe on their constitutional right to privacy. So, Jordan, if you're going to do that, the person that has that authority and has the fiduciary obligation to present the court with the facts, they have to know that if they abuse that, the price that they are going to pay is very high. So couldn't agree with Congressman Scalise more. It's more than just removing them in this case. There should be criminal penalties that attach as well.
All right, let's go to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. Mike calling in from California online too. Mike, welcome to JSecio Live.
I believe that, well, thank you. I believe that the whole system needs to be scrapped because, one, I don't trust the FBI. Two, I agree with Trump and I agree with Barr, but what happens when they're out of office? It'll be used again from one party to another party.
Right.
I don't think there should ever be an abuse again, an investigation of a presidential candidate that happened to then-candidate Trump, now President Trump. I need to see, we need a moral citizenry, and until we return to God, I don't see this being resolved.
Well, I think that, listen, that's why you need those safeguards in place, because the honest truth is if you're going to give this much more power to anybody, to any people, people are not perfect, and this is a great power that can be abused very easily, and we know that now, it's all out in the open, it's all been exposed, that there have got to be serious penalties for that abuse that are triggered immediately, that are easy for prosecutors to prosecute, and that prosecutors are required to prosecute. So that, and again, changes that are made to make an adversarial process, authorizations that put not just these sign-offs on renewals that were so uniform, but how about liability for those who sign off on renewals so that they actually read what they're signing off on? About liability for the judges to not just accept as evidence everything they get and question it. Now, can they disprove it? Not necessarily. But I mean, there's got to be some, it's got to be different than the normal court system. It already is. Significantly different than our regular court system. So because of that, there should be significant penalties for violating any of the necessary provisions to keep our constitutional rights in balance with our need for this for our own security. 1-800-684-3110. But there's a question right now than of, can Congress get its act together and even get this reauthorized by March 15th? We're talking just a couple of weeks.
Yeah, huge question, Jordan. I mean, I think, you know, when you have a situation where you have one chamber controlled by one party and the other chamber controlled by the other, you always wonder about this a little bit. It looked like, Jordan, that something along the lines of a straight reauthorization was probably going to happen. But that all fell apart yesterday. And again, this was not Republicans and Democrats fighting, Jordan. This was not even Democrats from different factions of the party fighting. This was three impeachment managers who have a different view on this. Basically, you had Chairman Nadler and then Adam Schiff saying that we were good with a straight reauthorization or very close to it. And then Congressman Lofgren, Zoe Lofgren, said, no, 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 we have to open it up to amendments. We have to debate all of these ideas. And she was the one, Jordan, that had support from the Republican side of the aisle. And Chairman Nadler said, if I bring this up, some of these amendments are going to pass, and I don't think the underlying bill will move out of committee. So that's the dynamic you're dealing with. It's not the House fighting with the Senate at this point, Jordan. It is literally House Democrats cannot even move a bill out of the Judiciary Committee, and there's only about 3 weeks to go before the deadline.
All right, folks, we're taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. We're going to keep taking your calls on FISA, but I also want to get a little bit into politics as well. And Eric calling in from New Mexico on line six. Eric, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks,
my question is, if Biden loses South Carolina, do the Democrats scramble and put somebody else in to steal the election from Sanders?
Well, one, I think win or lose, the Democrats, I mean, there's an article out today that they are willing to do serious damage to their own party. Serious damage. Some of these superdelegates have said, if he gets to the convention and isn't over the top already with the delegates necessary, that the superdelegates will not give him the votes. And that would then throw the convention into chaos, the party into chaos, and they're willing to do that damage to the party to keep Bernie Sanders from getting the nomination. That ran, again, that is in the news today. I mean, so it's a very interesting question and timely question that you brought that up, because this was in the New York Times. Quote, Democrat leaders willing to risk party damage to stop Bernie Sanders. Interviews with dozens of Democrat Party officials, including 93 superdelegates, found overwhelming opposition to handing Sanders the nomination if he fell short of a majority of delegates. That means the majority needed to get the nomination, even if he has the most delegates. And usually, if you had the most delegates, the party would rally around you with those superdelegates and put you over the threshold. So, Than, I think there are two questions. One, I believe at this point it looks like Joe Biden will eke out some kind of victory in South Carolina because of the African-American community there rallying behind him. Again, Bloomberg is not on the ballot there. He was in the debate, not on the ballot. And though Sanders has been kind of creeping up, Joe Biden's poll numbers have also started to creep up a bit again late in South Carolina. That's good news for him. I don't know what it exactly means for Super Tuesday, except for things may just be that much more muddled.
Well, I do know that that would mean there are two candidates, Joe Biden and Mayor Bloomberg, who will both try to be the alternative on Super Tuesday. That ultimately might end up helping Senator Sanders as well if your scenario plays out, Jordan. I would just say this. A second ballot where the plurality leader does not get the votes would be disaster for their party. But you know what? I think they know something else. I think Senator Sanders as the nomination is disaster for their party down ticket in the Senate and the House. So I think they're looking at that as well.
Right. They're thinking we could lose not just the presidency to Donald Trump, but we could lose our House majority almost certainly and lose more seats in the Senate, maybe even giving the Republicans close to like a supermajority, which again means all legislation we get through that Democrats oppose. So they're looking at this from a bigger picture and willing to do damage. Second half hour coming up, we'll get into FISA and politics. Take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
The Durham report, I am hopeful, is going to literally name names, list the people who did abuse the FISA court, and lay out penalties that then Attorney General Barr can go and carry out.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
All right, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live in our second half hour. So, again, FISA, why are we talking about it? It's not just the abuses that we learned about in the Inspector General's report. It's not just that we go way back and say that this could be a time where the American people say enough with this system because of the abuses that we've seen to the Trump campaign of an American citizen, Carter Page, that we shouldn't trust this system, that we need to scrap it, start over. Not that we don't need something similar, but something new, a new name, an adversarial process like Than talked about, that would still be a tool that could be utilized to keep us safe from terrorism and, again, those foreign powers which may seek to harm Americans and be involved in espionage and things like that. So could you do a short-term reauthorization? Sure. That requires a reform and a scrapping of this system in the sense of the but not getting away with FISA at all, that requires Congress to rebuild this, rethink this. And I think that would be the best way. Now, will that happen, actually? I don't know. Because it's Congress right now, Than, I just want to reset the stage for people, is having a tough time, even the Democrat-controlled House, a tough time even moving this out of committee, and they only got 2 weeks to do it before the whole FISA process, it expires. So the court would close, and the warrant application process would close.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. We're 17 days away from the deadline to reauthorize. We were 18 days before the Democrats tried to move a bill out of committee. So, you know, for something like that you're talking about, Jordan, for that to happen, you know, that probably, you probably couldn't write a bill that would get consensus in that amount of time. So if it's going to happen, it's going to happen in the sort of way that you described, where there would be some shorter stopgap reauthorization passed. I'll tell you this, though, Jordan, if they can have those conversations behind the scenes, those short gap reauthorizations, they happen all the time. So what you would need is you would need consensus from a group that already seems to be in play. Zoe Lofgren's talking with Jim Jordan, of all people. I mean, if those two can come together and say, we want to work together to create some of these reauthorizations, and they could agree on some of the amendments, Jordan, then I could see a 60-day, a 90-day reauthorization happen while they move that process through. It's going to be hard, though, to write that bill from scrap without some sort of stopgap. 17 days is a very short amount of time in Congress.
All right, folks, we're going to get to your phone calls now. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Mark in Missouri on line 3. Mark, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you very much, and I love your show.
Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, my question is this. I'm just wondering if we have laws already in place. I mean, when you look at what happened, fraud, misrepresentation, I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but that occurred clearly. But I don't see anybody up on charges. I don't see anything being enforced. I mean, do we have the safeguards already in place?
There are laws that could apply, but they're not built into FISA specifically. So there's nothing that FISA that's triggered by FISA specifically, which then gives a lot of leeway to a grand jury, to the Department of Justice, to decide whether or not to prosecute its own. And that's what you're talking about. So for long term, remember, you're asking the Department of Justice to bring charges against one of its own, oftentimes long-term bureaucrats, an attorney, someone who's served a long time. So if they have abused it, so and they have the discretion to bring those charges or not, that becomes an issue. So that's why I believe whatever happens with FISA and the renewal, that the reforms, one of the reforms that should be required, are criminal violations built into FISA when an abuse occurs that are triggered by those violations so that you're not having to rely on more general criminal law that you could apply to these attorneys who might be and government officials who might be abusing it. But you actually can rely on criminal violations built in to FISA that specifically cited by FISA. I think that would, or whatever we call it in the future. We'll continue to take your calls on this and politics, 1-800-684-3110. And always stay up to speed at aclj.org. We'll be right back.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Say, I think Dan Harry, they did a great job yesterday handling what was a Democrat debate that was tough to follow because of all the screaming, but certainly had those moments like, well, Elizabeth Warren said, you said to a woman, you know, just kill it. At least they didn't do that to me when I was pregnant and lost my job as a teacher, as a young woman. And by the way, there's questions about that story being accurate by Elizabeth Warren, but also the idea that someone so pro-abortion would be so offended by this kill it statement if you're just talking about a fetus, you're just talking about a clump of cells. I mean, can you have that both ways? I think they did a great job explaining that yesterday on the broadcast and pulling out the keys from a debate, which, again, they did expose Bernie Sanders for what he really is, this Castro comments and doubling down, going into the most difficult state for him yet in South Carolina, the one where he hasn't had the lead, but he's been creeping up on Joe Biden. Before we get back to the phone calls, as we talk politics, then 1-800-684-3110 and FISA, this could still be, I mean, people are kind of giving this to Joe Biden, but if you really watch the news and those who are tracking the polls, momentum is still with Bernie Sanders. And so far, there hasn't been anything to prove that that's been blunted. And if you've got the momentum and you're within 3 or 4 points, you're actually likely to win. So, I mean, now it would be, I think, a shock, and it would be probably the end of Joe Biden's campaign.
Yeah, I definitely think it would be. I mean, look, if you look at the polling, Joe Biden clearly has the edge. I think the last three, he was up 20-1, up 15-1, and up 8-1. But Jordan, I mean, we've seen this dynamic before with President Trump. Who has the rallies? Who has the energy? And it's clearly Bernie Sanders, even in South Carolina, even with those poll numbers. So look, I'm one of these guys that I actually think it's going to be a lot closer than the polls, and I won't be surprised if Bernie Sanders wins it. But again, just like you said, Jordan, it goes back to the expectations game. What does Joe Biden have to do in South Carolina to actually become a viable candidate to get to that 1991 delegate number? Jordan, I think he's got to win by a blowout. I mean, I think he's got to win by 15 or 20 points. Yeah, and if you look at Super Tuesday, Bernie Sanders has a lot more money, and he's way up in a lot of these states. In fact, Jordan, there's a chance he's going to get every statewide delegate in the state of California. If he does that, nobody can catch him. Maybe he can't get to the majority, but nobody will be able to catch him if he does that.
All right, let's continue to take, if you have calls for us, 1-800-684-3110. We'd love to hear from folks in South Carolina as well who are seeing this play out on the ground there and in those Super Tuesday states. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. But we continue to talk about FISA as well. Let me finish out. I want to take the final calls on FISA, and we'll focus then on politics. We'll keep you updated, too. Do they even get to the reauthorization by March 15th? It's something to actually, let's play Jim Jordan, who commented on this as well, because this is kind of what I've been keying on. Why are we even talking about FISA potentially being scrapped? Why is there such a trouble in Congress with reauthorizing a program that's been around for 20 years? Here's the problem, as Jim Jordan explains it.
Remember what prompted this all, this whole debate. Remember, it was the Justice Department in 2016 who went to the FISA court and misled the court. That's a nice way of saying they lied to the court 17 times. So we need to change how this works.
We need to change how this works because of what happened to the Trump campaign in 2016. So we're kind of seeing, by the way, Than, even inside the Democrats, Zoe Lofgren, who comes from the tech world, she was a House manager supporting impeachment. And so I spent a lot of time listening to her on the floor of the U.S. Senate making this case, and she tried to make a softer pitch for impeachment. If you can make one, that's what she was trying to do, basically looking the whole time at Senator Murkowski and Collins, I will tell you. Maybe that's something new for people, but literally she would just keep her eyes right on the two of them. And it didn't work, but she's got issues with it, and with one of her former impeachment managers, Jerry Nadler. And so she started going forward with amendments that Republicans also supported.
Yeah, she's not a Jim Jordan conservative, Jordan. I mean, she's not. No. And look, she's not in favor of the president. And frankly, she's probably not all that alarmed by the fact that the Trump campaign was surveilled. What she is alarmed about is that the system is allowing the people who have control over it to abuse it. And she's alarmed about it enough to set aside some of the things that happened inside it that she might have even think we're okay for the country to say, oh, we've got a problem here and we have to reform it. So think about this coalition. It's being led by Zoe Lofgren and Jim Jordan, and they're opposing Chairman Jerry Nadler and Adam Schiff in a reauthorization that both the administration and Speaker Pelosi want. Jordan, that's pretty compelling when that partnership comes together and says, okay, slow down, we've got to have this conversation. I don't think they can get to a full rewrite by March 15th. I think your short stopgap is probably what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I would love to see that. I would love a short stopgap, clean reauthorization. Let Attorney General Barr put in his reforms short term, but don't leave it to the next Attorney General to keep those good reforms. We may trust Attorney General Barr, but let's put them in statutorily. This is up to Congress, right? This power is a congressional power that is delegated to the executive branch. They don't have any obligation to delegate this power to the executive branch. So if they're going to do it, put in the protections that should be bipartisan so that we all know on both sides of the aisle, we're not going to abuse this. And then if abuse does occur, there's going to be criminal liability, kind of almost snapback criminal liability that's immediately triggered, that's clear in the statute, that doesn't give as much decision-making and also deference to the Department of Justice, because we understand the conflict of interest of the Department of Justice prosecuting and bringing charges against its own officials. So we have to, and then adding in an adversarial process. And you make those changes and maybe rename the system. Rename the system, make it more consequential for those who reauthorize, do the renewals of the FISA warrants also, so they actually take the time to know what they're renewing, and it's not just a blank signature, and a court process where it should probably not be 99.9%. Now, if they're bringing the right kind of warrant request, it should be a high number, but it probably shouldn't be that high. And when there's abuses, the abuses should be taken care of quickly, not allowed to potentially impact an election as did this last abuse, which is what Jim Jordan is talking about. Let me go to Nicole in Texas online too. Nicole, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi,
Nicole.
Hi, can you hear me?
Gotcha.
Okay. I wanted to say I'm actually a South Carolina resident, but a new listener, and I agree totally with everything you guys are saying, and I think what's important is just as a middle-class American, people have to understand that the president's character was just destroyed. He's done so many good things for our country, but the focus on these
Right.
These irrelevant things have destroyed his character. And I think on a smaller scale, we have to look at this. This affects us at a state level with the criminal justice system. You know, the secrecy, like you said, the secret meetings. If there is so much evidence, why do they need to have these secret meetings and hide? Present your evidence, bring it to light. This happens every day in the state criminal justice system with grand juries and things like this. So right. If we can do something and on a higher scale, then hopefully this can, you know, transfer down into a smaller scale.
I think you're right. I think you're right, Nicole. Once people hear that you got a warrant issued against your campaign, basically, so that the federal government could spy on it because they think that you had foreign agents, Russians, infiltrating your campaign, and that you were accepting that infiltration, that even if that's proven years later to be absolutely wrong, as the Mueller report said, there was no collusion, there was no conspiracy to collude with the Russian government, it damages the reputation of our president in the United States and around the world. What does that mean? It damages the reputation of the United States. So I think it all is going to back to what we said, which is there's reasons to have classified info. There's reasons to have a secretive process, but there's ways to do it that are better. We can learn from the mistakes. We can learn from the abuses that have been exposed, as Jim Jordan said. Why are House Democrats having such a problem with this? Because of what was done by the FBI to a Republican candidate for president. It even freaks them out. It even freaks them out to just blanketly reauthorize that thing. And I think that's the truth, because they know it could happen to their side.
Yeah, well, they derailed their own process yesterday, so you're clearly right on that, Jordan. I mean, the one thing I would say to the caller, and you alluded to this, but the fact that we're dealing about with classified information is why the system can't be fully public. But here's what you can do. You can give someone who has the proper clearance access to all of that classified information and then tell them they have the job to oppose the warrant application. So don't take it out of private, but give someone with the proper clearance access to all the information. Like, I don't know, maybe the dossier can't be verified. He would know that, and he would be able to tell the FISA court because the prosecutors did not.
Yeah. I mean, here we go, folks. We're going to continue to take your calls. We got another segment coming up. We'll talk politics as well. We got a question about superdelegates. We'll get to that as well. It's a very Democrat party. You'd be surprised even, like, who's looking at it. Walter Mondale is still a superdelegate for the Democrat Party. 92 years old, former vice president and presidential candidate for the Democrat Party. He's a superdelegate. So what is that process like? Republicans don't have it. It's nothing similar. We'll talk about that as well. We've got a call about it. 1-800-684-3110.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Waiting for this phone call because there's all this talk in the New York Times today. Actually, the headline is quite telling, as we talked about the headline. And again, if it's in the New York Times and it's about Democrats, it's probably actually accurate. All the news that's fit to print, if it's about Democrats, probably more accurate. And of course, they don't really like Bernie Sanders, these mainstream. They're pretty liberal. Maybe it's good to know that these liberals are liberal, but not communist. I mean, it's kind of nice to know. Or at least they think that, well, since a communist can't win yet, we shouldn't have them as the nominee. But because their headline is that Democrat leaders are willing to risk their party damage to stop Bernie Sanders. They interviewed dozens of Democrat Party officials, including 93 superdelegates. Within this article, I find that, you know, it's interesting that people like Walter Mondale, former vice president and presidential candidate for the Democrat Party, is still a superdelegate for the Democrat Party. And we've got questions about that. Norma calling in from Georgia on line four. Norma, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Well, thank you for your show, because I've learned a lot. But I do not understand the superdelegates.
Okay.
Who is a superdelegate? How do they get to be a superdelegate?
Yep.
And can they take away the delegates that someone has won during the caucuses and the election?
So they can't take away, but there's 771 of them, of these superdelegates. So with their votes, and so you take all the delegates that you can win in the country, their votes could sway who the nominee is, and it could be someone different than who has got the most delegates going into the Democratic convention. That hasn't happened, but it could happen in modern times. And that's when you talk about having these convention battles. So who is a member? First is elected members of the Democrat National Committee. So that's like the chairs and the vice chairs of the state political parties. There's 212 national committee men and women who are elected to represent their states. In fact, a lot of times you'll vote on that at party meetings, or sometimes inside, and you'll vote on delegates to the convention. They vote on these superdelegates. So there's 212 like that. There's 75 at-large members who are nominated by the party chairman and chosen by the full DNC. Democrat governors and the mayor of the District of Columbia. Democrat members of Congress. So that includes all the Democrat members of Congress and both from the House and the Senate. And distinguished party leaders. That is current and former presidents, vice presidents. That's why Walter Mondale is 92, is still a superdelegate. Congressional leaders and DNC chairs, so current and former. And there were 20 of those who were superdelegates at the 2016 convention as well. They make up about 15% of the total delegates. So Than, as Norma asked, can they take away delegates? No. Can they sway you had two candidates that were fairly close? But one was 775 delegates short of the other, and then put the convention into chaos by giving your delegates to them? Yeah, they could.
Yeah, and so much for a democratic process, Jordan. I mean, look, the last time around, the superdelegates are why Hillary Clinton beat Bernie Sanders, because she had so much momentum early on. The one change they did make this year, Jordan, is that those 771 won't vote on the first ballot. So if Bernie Sanders were to get to that 1991 magical number, they would not vote. But here's the thing, Jordan. If it goes to a second ballot, as you said, not only do those 771 have a major impact on who gets nominated because they get to vote, but all of the ones that the Democrat Party told the rest of the country were pledged, they become unpledged.
Yeah.
They can vote for anyone. You think that's democratic?
Yeah. Yeah. Republicans do not have this system. We nominate delegates that we vote on delegates to the convention. If you've already voted in the primary this year, you probably did that. And there are bound delegates to the convention, and there are unbound delegates. But you can choose to vote for delegates that are bound to support, like President Trump. And that they have to vote support President Trump's nomination on behalf of you and your state and the process. But Republicans don't have the superdelegate issue. And remember what Than's referencing. Hillary Clinton went into the start of the process with all these superdelegates already pledged to her. So when she started, she had a major delegate lead over Bernie Sanders because they would vote in the first round. So that was like counted as like winning states. And she would keep adding those delegates in, and Bernie Sanders was not. So what they've done to try and make it more fair to like a Bernie Sanders type candidate is giving them one shot at winning all enough delegates before the superdelegates get involved. That's why, we talk about the idea of superdelegates and the reforms, the difference this has been. Let me go back to the phones. David in Oregon on line three. David, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Jordan. I finally got through. My comment is, you know, we're making up words again, making up phrases again to make it sound palatable.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders is a socialist, pure and simple.
Yeah.
He happens to be running on the Democratic ticket. The two don't work together. So we put, and even the right side says the same thing. They're saying democratic socialism. Well, there's no such thing. And I think that in order to get the people aware of what's really happening, we need to take the democratic side off of that socialism
front and let
the population know.
Yeah. I feel like, David, if he gets the nomination, socialist will be the softest term used to describe him. And the word Democrat won't be in front of it. And it will be communist is actually what it is. Now, why they use that term is because that's the party he's actually a part of. It's the Democrat Socialist Party. And AOC is a member of this party. The reason they would claim to be democratic socialists is that they still believe in free and fair elections. They're not authoritarian communists and socialists. They'll praise the authoritarians, like Bernie Sanders said, Than. When authoritarians say do something good, we should still praise them. Let's take a listen to it.
Sir, you've praised the Chinese Communist Party for lifting more people out of extreme poverty than any other country. You also have a track record of expressing sympathy for socialist governments in Cuba and in Nicaragua. Can Americans trust that a democratic socialist president will not give authoritarians a free pass?
I have opposed authoritarianism all over the world, and I was really amazed at what Mayor Bloomberg just said a moment ago. He said that the Chinese government is responsive to the Politburo. But who is the Politburo responsive to? Who elects the Politburo? You got a real dictatorship there? Of course you have a dictatorship in Cuba. What I said is what Barack Obama said in terms of Cuba, that Cuba made progress on education. Yes, I think, really? Really?
Yes, literacy
programs
no
are bad. What Barack Obama
Barack
said
Obama
is they made great progress
doors.
On education and
excuses.
Healthcare.
Yeah, so there's the communist in his own words, Bernie Sanders. I do want to take Don's call from California. He's been holding on. Don, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Don.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate your program, and I'm a monthly contributor.
Oh, thank you so much, Don. We appreciate you.
I got to ask, because I don't think anybody else has asked this question. The FISA judges have been given a responsibility, a trust. They validate, did not live up to that trust. Why aren't they impeached?
They're pretty upset. Well, first of all, they're rotated judges. They could be impeached because they're judicial officers. They can be removed from their lifetime appointments. But they've actually been the ones who have been exposing the wrongdoing. They're very upset. Now, part of the problem with FISA is they don't have a lot of ways to dig. They have to, like, take on good faith what the FBI and DOJ presents. They probably need a team to look through evidence for them. That's probably something else that should be added to verify what has been submitted. We're just at that point, and it's the FBI's own fault. They got us here because they can't be trusted anymore with this kind of power. We'll talk about it more tomorrow on Jay Sekulow Live.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.